Welcome, and thanks for joining me today on Mortgage Manager Playbook, a podcast for sales leaders who want to improve their team's sales performance and originate more loans. I'm Pat Sherlock, your host. Today's topic is growing your mortgage business in 2025. I have the perfect expert on this important topic, and that is Rick Rock. Rick is well known within our industry. His blogs are fabulous. I recommend for everyone to certainly LinkedIn with him and to receive his blogs. Rick is currently with NFM Mortgage Company as the head of new growth strategy. And previous to that, Rick had been with Cross Country and several other well-known mortgage companies. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm so impressed with your blogs, and I've been following you for years, and the last few of them have been really striking home with me. And so I want to talk about that topic today, but let's talk in the beginning. So I know you have a science background, but how did you get into the mortgage space?
Yeah, I mean, probably just like many within the mortgage community, you know, it was a family really business. My father, after he retired from the Air Force, started a real estate company in the late 70s, mid 70s, and then later added on different mortgage services in the 80s and in 90s. And so mortgage, real estate, and housing were always very much part of my ecosystem. I remember going to college where, you know, I got my undergrad degree in electrical engineering. Mm-hmm. And I remember asking my father was asking me, like, you know, whether or not I was going to go into real estate or mortgage. And I just said, look, Dad, you know, the last thing I would want to do is to really end up where you are. And, you know, after 5 years working in technology and working in semiconductors, actually in chip manufacturing, I ended up starting a small technology company, a CRM company. And mm-hmm. I kind of went to an industry vertical that I knew, which was mortgage, right? Mm-hmm. And the company was called SGI. And it was a company that I sold in 2000, end of 2004, 2005. Mm-hmm. And I ended up sort of merging efforts with another pipeline management tool called PushMX software, which was a good software platform that was a bolt mm-hmm. on to Calyx to kind of compete against Encompass. And then that ended up imploding with the market in 08. And so from there, I ended up transitioning over to Calyx software because Calyx really liked what I was doing. And it's few, there are very few people in technology or within the vendor space that really understands the mortgage workflow and the process.
Right.
And so I understood sort of the technology and I understand sort of the needs of the originator, which really sort of set me apart. And then, after about 2.5 years at, you know, at Calyx, I just felt that Point was not really innovating in the direction that it needed to go. And as a result, I ended up leaving and starting kind of a consulting practice called Menlo. And so Menlo since 2009 has been a business that I've had that effectively, you know, raised capital for companies, did M&A for companies, mm-hmm. helped with compliance and workflow and implementation strategies, growth strategies. And so it's been really helpful. So I've had a variety of different arrangements with companies over the years, pretty much revolving, depending upon the market needs, revolving around M&A, growth, and acquisitions.
Well, your story is similar to so many others, and it's nice to know that you moved back to our world, because we always say we'll never go to it when our family's been involved with it, but we always seem to. So talk about, Rick, a little bit, since you've been certainly well-known for speaking in our industry and, of course, your blogs that I've already mentioned, but talk about the challenges that you see that lenders should be addressing and aren't addressing.
Well, it's a really good question, because it depends on the lender, right? Most lenders are fairly, their capital structure and the experience of the leadership team is out of alignment with what with their growth efforts mm-hmm. and their growth objectives, right? Growth to some degree is perceived as kind of a commodity because it feels so easy to do. And the problem is when the market drives business our way, we feel like we're growing our company. We're growing our company. And the reality is you're just on a surfboard riding the waves. And then when the wave, you know, recesses, you're in panic mode. And a lot of leaders in our business tend to misunderstand success. They misunderstand the money that they receive, whether it was COVID money 2020 and 2021, or the run-ups leading up to the 08 crash, or the little bursts of production in 2012 and 2015, 16, 2019. It's like most companies tend to, and leaders tend to misjudge what's really driving their pipeline. And intentional growth is very, it's difficult to do, and you look at companies, and the recipe in the Blue Book out there is very clear around ways you can grow in a down market. It's just that there's a lot of factors that just get in the way, and a lot of it's pride and ego, and the money that I made before kind of enables me to block out advice or direction from people like me or companies who have done it. So but that's kind of where I think your original question was where do they get it wrong? Was that the question?
Well, the question really ties together with what should they be focusing on versus what they
Yeah.
actually are. They're ignoring all the things that you're
I
talking
think
about,
the
which is
biggest
true.
focus has got to be, is really has to be on just being realistic. I mean, really just be very realistic. I was talking, here's a perfect example. Pat, a mortgage company called me today from the Southeast. All excited, wanting to raise capital, wanting to grow, wanting to attract a number of loan officers. We feel like we have something special, right? And I said, great, I'd love to learn. Maybe you do have something special. So let's peel the onion back. Well, the company started 3 years ago, 2021. They have four loan officers. They do about $8 million a month. They're a non-delegated correspondent, so they don't do any of their underwriting. They have a small warehouse line for conventional business. It's like they're not realistic at all. Like at all. Like, I'm like, well, what's your what, how much cash do you have? What's your net worth? The net worth is under $1 million. It's like that's fine. I mean, those are good recipes, right? Not everybody has to scale, not everybody has to be, cross country. But my point is, you have to be realistic with what you really have at your fingertips. And there's so many companies, whether you're at that stage or whether you're a company doing, $500 million a year and you can't quite get to a billion, and they're not realistic as to what it takes to get there. You could be a company doing 7 billion and really, and then have aspirations to do 10 or 12 or 13. And you just think it's easy because that, even at, and the more production you're at, the more dangerous it becomes, because especially when if you're doing 5 or 6 or 7 billion, as individual owners, if you're doing that kind of production, you probably have $10 or $20 million in the bank, right? But it still doesn't mean that, as like personally, one probably might have that, arguably. But just because you have that money in the bank doesn't guarantee you that you're going to get meet the goals, that you have what it takes, or the people in place, or the processes in place to go from 7 billion to 12 billion, right? They just think it's so easy. We got to 7 billion, which is a massive, massive accomplishment by itself, but it's still, success can be very like disillusioning. It could really disillusion you into thinking that the next stages of success are going to be easy. And it's that's where pride gets in the way, and that's where, but really, I've seen a lot of companies with good leadership. With good leadership and a very realistic plan, grow with a very thin balance sheet. And I've seen a lot of companies with a fat balance sheet with very stupid leadership, and they end up wasting a lot of cash and a lot of careers in the process, thinking that they got it. They got it. It's just that the arrogance irks me probably the most, because it's the hardest. You can change a culture, but it's hard to change. It's hard to change people. It's hard to change who someone is, right? You can change policy and procedure and culture that sort of derives from that. But when you have someone who's just completely arrogant or completely obstinate or really full of themselves or whatever the case may be, it tends to be a disaster for sustainability for a company to just grow on an ongoing basis.
Well, you're hitting in my sweet spot because I live this every day just like you do. And I would have to say that I see the same thing. And our industry really is certainly, when they receive volume through rate reductions, they all think they're Einstein, when in fact of the matter is, how do you sustain a business? So that leads to this topic, and especially the blog that you did on the analytics regarding the performance of loan officers. And this all ties down to the number one strategy is that let's hire good loan officers, and what does that all mean? So, Rick, why don't you talk about what the numbers show? And these are the numbers, and we can't ignore them. So, talk about that.
The reason for both the post and the research that I've done, quite frankly, really revolves around the attitude around how easy it is to grow. Like, someone might say, "Hey, I just pick up 2 or 3 million a month in Louisiana or Indiana or Missouri. I just want another 10 or 15 million a month in volume," right? And for some reason, business development, I mean, we have various functional areas within a mortgage company that are very serious functions. You know, head of operations, head of underwriting, head of credit risk. These are sophisticated positions. Head of capital markets, head of secondary, head of processing. These are very technical careers and very technical job functions. But people, there's so many sales guys in the business that aren't very technical, that the problem is the idea of a technical, more disciplined or more sophisticated sort of process for growth tends to get overlooked, right? And it gets very commoditized. Growth is easy. Mm-hmm. You know, just go out there, get the business. Pat, go out there and get the business. All you need to do is 3 or 4 units a month. I know you're only doing one every other month. Just pick up the phone, make a bunch of phone calls. It's like, it becomes so trite and so naive. So that was the genesis of why I started sort of diving into, what does it mean? If you found a $500,000 a month producer in Louisiana, right? Most companies are like, oh God, why would you bother? Right? Like, it's only half, you know, that what, well, the reality is, if you're doing $600,000 or $700,000 a year in business, or $600,000 or $700,000 a month in business in Louisiana, you're in the top 20% of all originators in the entire state.
Right.
So this is where the alignment is missing. Go out and get business. Go out and get business. Well, I don't want that business. It's like, well, wait, time out. Like, everything you're saying is conflicting and it makes no sense. Right. If you want to actually grow in Louisiana or in Indiana or in Missouri, you have to understand the dynamics. You know, you have to calibrate your understanding, because if you're comparing a loan officer in a suburb of DC or in Inland Empire in California or in Texas, or it's totally apples and oranges. You can't compare them. You can't say, well, they want 130 basis points. It makes no sense. Like, we pay our loan officers 90 or 100. Well, why? Like, this loan officer makes 130 basis points, but 90% of their business is FHA. We make more money in FHA. Oh, well, yeah, I know, but they shouldn't be making that. Well, everybody makes that in that market, you know, and that's okay. You know, we can make money on 130 basis points paying an LO if we're bringing in 320, 330 basis points gross margin. We can pay 130 basis points. Shoot, we could pay 140, you know. But I think the approach to sales, whether it's growing a mortgage company or the approach to sales when it comes to coaching loan officer, gets really cheapened. You know, it's almost insulting to the sales professional, you know, quite frankly, because you don't become an expert at what you do unless you are very technical about how you're going about doing it. You know, athletes review the tape. You know, this interview could get so much better if we watch this 25 times and we understand, you know, and we look at ways that we could improve my answers to your questions and the questions you're asking me. And by the 25th time, this could be a phenomenal, phenomenal interview type of thing, right? Same thing with a loan officer. It's like, you can't just go out there and get the business. It's like, well, what are they going to say? How are they going to say it? What's their pitch? What's their value proposition? What's truly the unique value proposition as to why they should use Rick Rock, who they don't know, from Pat, who they've used for years? Why would they switch? Right.
Well, you're in my bailiwick, and I agree with you 100%. The numbers, Rick, that I thought were interesting, that you had data regarding that out of 200 and some thousand, I forget exactly,
Yep.
191,000 of loan officers only did one loan in 2024. Talk about that.
Well, it's funny. I'm looking at the data right now. You know, it's really amazing. So, what I wanted to know was, well, the ecosystem has really been reduced, right? Going into there's, you know, 200 or so thousand, you know, licensed loan officers coming into 2024. And then if you look at the number of loan officers that just did one unit the entire year, then you've reduced that to about 108, 109,000. But if you look at the number of, let's say that how many loan officers did one unit a month, just 12 units. Well, then it goes from 108,000 down to 57,000. Right. So from a recruiting standpoint, if Pat and Rick Rock are starting a mortgage company, we want to say like, hey, we're unique, we're different, we're going to grow, we got tons of capital, we have the licensing, we're going to grow. Our pool of loan officers is a lot smaller than you think. Right. And so if you and I are whiteboarding out this brilliant plan and all we want to do is recruit only loan officers that do 1 to 2 million a month. That's it. That's all we want to do because we know what we're going to do, right? Well, there's only 15,000 of those people. It's a small number, you know. And guess what? Rick and Pat's mortgage company is now competing against companies like New American Funding and companies like Fairway and companies like Guild and CMG and those who are, in my view, appropriately exercising their capital and writing checks to buy that production. And so you and I have to figure out how are we going to compete for those 15,000, right? So it is pretty striking. So other of the 108,000 loan officers, let's say that did one loan of last year, like that are actively licensed still, right? There's only about, in fact, there's only about, I'm gonna just say, there's only about 46,000 loan officers that are really recruitable, that really can, because most mortgage companies, non-depository, they're commission only, draw against commission, whatever it is. You can't live on making one unit a month. You just can't. Very rare exceptions. You can do, you know, very rare exceptions for forward standard conforming loans. You might be able to, you know, get away with doing that with some reverse business and that sort of thing. But for the most part, for most of us, you can't live on one unit a month. It's not going to happen. So you're competing for 46,000 loan officers across 28,000 mortgage lenders, non-depository mortgage lenders. So 28,000 Rick and Pats are competing against those 46,000 loan officers. And most of those loan officers are off the table. I mean, 40% or so a year might churn, right? And so now you're dealing with about 25,000 loan officers. So it's, you have to be very realistic, and most companies just aren't realistic at all.
Well, you raise a question, which is one of my favorite topics, is that it ties together with how many folks in the leadership level really do understand that, because
They
the
don't.
number they don't. And then this leads to the issue, like, what's the solution set? Well, one of them is to obviously develop and bring new people into our industry, which is my favorite topic, because at the pool of experience, people that are worth recruiting is very small and highly competitive. And so otherwise, your growth strategies just aren't going to be viable, is what it comes down to. So talk about this issue. You did mention in your recent blog talking about doing refis through, maybe the first step is refis should go through a call center, even if you're self-sourcing. And that's a radical thought that I agree with 100%, but you cannot get lenders to go that way. So talk about how you kind of see it.
That's actually, I mean, look, I think it's a good, that's a good idea. I think the challenge is loan officers are just so afraid of that deal not closing. It's like a control thing. They want to make sure they have control over it. So if they source a refinance opportunity, I mean, the lowest hanging fruit, quite frankly, with AI and it is going to be providing efficiencies for deals like, you know, really high credit quality consumers and refinances and so on. to be able to really streamline that process to leave room for more complicated purchase related business opportunities. But it depends on how the loan officers are compensated. You know, it's almost like some companies for renos, right? They have a reno team. And so if you get a reno opportunity, you might get paid 80 bips or whatever it is. If you get, you know, some slightly reduced, but you're really handing off that renovation opportunity to a team and they're going to do it because most loan officers aren't very good at renos
Right.
or 203Ks or even new construction opportunities. So one-time close, for instance. So I think it is a good idea with what you just said regarding refinances. It's just the question is just one of compensation and making sure the service levels are so tight where the loan officers feel confident that they source an opportunity, they hand it off, that they get paid their comp on it, you know?
So, is it time for lenders to really raise the really big question, who owns the customer? And does the loan officer actually own the customer? Or does the lender who's on the hook for that customer, who is that actually? Because really what the industry has done, it's made it McDonald's, where we have all these little franchises, but no rules. It's kind of, that's why you're renting a loan officer is what it boils down to. Do you see that strategy now coming to grips with that it's a high cost strategy that doesn't really lend itself to a non-refinance market? How do you see this actually playing out?
Well, you mixed a couple different questions in a single
Sure.
question. So which one do you want me to answer first about the refinances or?
Well, the issue is how are you going to grow as a lender, understanding that the pool of loan officers that are worth recruiting is relatively small and high. So what's going to happen? So you either have less lenders who can't, in essence, grow because they can't recruit these people, or you're going to have to recognize that it's just the tip of consolidation is going to move in a rapid pace because everything is changing in a dynamic way. So really it's asking that question, how are you going to grow your business? It really is what it comes down to.
You know, I'm not optimistic for the mid-sized lender. You know, I'm just not, and I hate saying that. My family was a mid-sized lender. You know, mid-sized, you know, real estate platform, housing organization. But the cost of doing business is too high. Cost of compliance is high, and the cost of competition is going to make the cost of compliance look inexpensive. And I say that because technology is really is going to be the key differentiator over the next 5 years. And so what you're going to see is those companies who have the money to invest in technology, like NFM, like, you know, NFM has spent years investing in AI, and it's providing tremendous efficiencies to where, you know, the cost to close a loan is a couple is like $2,000. Like, how could you possibly, let's call it $2,300, right? How could you possibly compete if you're with all the, if you're a lender that's where your cost to close a loan is 10 or 11 grand,
Loathing, right.
which is most of them, right? How can you compete with that, right?
Right.
Well, that's only going to get, it's only going to get cheaper for lenders at scale. So that way, actually, companies like NFM and others, as you do more volume, the cost to produce is actually going to go down tremendously.
Right.
And you're not going to have, you're not going to add the traditional layers that you would have had to previously as you grew. So companies who don't make those investments in technology won't reap those benefits, which is most of them, right?
So
So,
that lends itself to being a broker. I mean, that's what it's really saying.
well,
You're out of.
or what, there is a trend that I'm seeing, and there's about, I call them super brokers, but they're about, I don't know, about 24 to 25 lenders, the non-depository institutions that in some cases are lenders, but they're all, but all their volume still goes to UWM, but UWM or Rocket will do non-delegated correspondence. So they'll still close the loan in that lender's name. So it looks like that they're closing the loan in their name, but all that is being done by UWM or Rocket, right? So
Right.
these lenders are becoming, in essence, retail organizations to these large wholesale platforms and correspondent platforms. So to your point, it's either you're going to be a broker or you'll be a part of these really, really thin margin IMBs who are really just front end stores for Rocket and UWM, or
Right.
you'll be part of the consolidated IMB space. The I mean, it's I'm not optimistic for this. Could be a lot of, and there's, unfortunately, I'm not saying there should be as a moral statement, just based on the economics and what technology is doing, there really should be a lot of consolidation. There's companies out there, again, that are just so completely unrealistic with what they feel that they'd like to achieve in the years to come with the realities of the marketplace. They just don't understand it.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And I think just really over the last few months where everything was bet upon refinancing happening, and it doesn't look like this year that's going to happen. And so therefore, their business model is really up for grabs there because it's not going to operate as a refinance-driven business this year. So Rick, if you could share maybe a couple strategies that you think lenders should do to obviously grow their business this year. And obviously, it does not look like it's going to be a refinance year.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, depends on your capital position. I mean, if you're well capitalized, it's going to be, I would say if you're well capitalized, or at least competitively capitalized, okay, I would focus on really immediate markets. You know, if I'm based in Fairfax, Virginia, the last thing I'm going to do is probably add a $2 million a month branch in Colorado or in New Mexico, right?
Sure.
Because, you know, the chances of losing that, I mean, the cost of acquisition is high, but the cost of losing a branch and the investment you put into a branch is high, and the risks are high. So I don't think in a market like this, you're going to want to take those risks. I would draw a 200-mile radius around my company, and I'd hit every single loan officer I possibly could as a recruiting strategy. As a sort of branding strategy, you have to really understand like what it is that really makes us unique, separate from like we have a great culture. You know, I mean, are you really researching products that really could be, you know, like not too many lenders are very aggressive on FHA, for instance. And there's a handful of companies, Village Capital being one, who is very aggressive on FHA, right? Because that's kind of their sweet spot. There are companies who are very aggressive and they're very comfortable with jumbo, right? If I were a mid-tier lender doing, you know, 50, 60 million a month, for instance, I would focus on a 200-mile radius. I would try to get as many loan officers as I could. I would really sell the fact that, you know, there's a leaner, less bureaucratic, seat at the table kind of strategy that you wouldn't necessarily get going to a guild or a CMG. And as a result of the lack of infrastructure, could be a little bit more flexible on compensation and on the pricing strategy. So that's sort of, it's kind of an idea of like your recruiting focus should be really in your backyard. And until you get to about 35 to 50 million a month in volume, I wouldn't even bother expanding much beyond a 200-mile radius around your backyard, you know?
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Anything else that you want to share with our listeners today?
Well, no, I AI is going to eliminate, it's going to eliminate jobs as companies grow. Okay. It's not going to eliminate jobs of the ones that we have, because the ones we have you need. But if you're going to grow, when you implement AI as you scale, you're not going to have to hire the extra processors, underwriters, audits, post-closing audits, legal. You're not going to, you know, necessarily need the lawyers that you could potentially, that you potentially otherwise would need. So AI is here to stay. So like, this is not a luxury item. It's a necessary piece to understand where you can implement AI to really yield an operating efficiency. Otherwise you will not be competitive. But if you're adverse to AI, you really don't have the leadership for growth and you've never been able to grow, that's when I would necessarily, depending upon the age of the owner, look at an acquisition or look at taking myself and asking myself, like, what national lender is not operating within my environment, within my geography, right? Because that lender needs us because we do volume here. And as a result, my value now goes up. Now I have something to negotiate with a national lender. And then you really negotiate a really smart agreement to be able to grow, shed some expenses, and then to have the resources to grow to meet your goals.
Well, they're great points, and I definitely have to have you come back and talk about them some more because I do think lenders, which you're calling realism, I call really understanding the financial numbers in your industry and in your company. So I want to thank you for sharing all of your thoughts today. And also, how can people get a hold of you if they would like to have further conversations with you?
I mean, they can call my cell phone on, the 413-297-6895, or you can email me at rick@menlocompany.com or at roque@nfmlending.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn.
Thanks, Rick, for sharing your wisdom today on this important topic. And I want to thank our listeners. Certainly subscribe to our weekly podcast by going to patsherlock.com. Thanks so much, Rick.
Thanks for listening to Mortgage Manager Playbook. You can catch up on all our episodes by subscribing to receive each week a new show. Don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and team members. If you're looking to increase production, call me to discuss my prospecting sales training program, Ramping Up Realtor Referral Sources. Check out my website, www.patsherlock.com.